This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Hey, 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 welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We are talking about ladies who were involved in public projects or services.
Before we start, don't forget, we're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends, having a fun conversation. If you hear an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. So this week, we will be talking about Clotia Woodard Smith, architect and urban planner who left her stamp on mid-20th century Washington, D.C. I'm Jessica Rogers, packing up for an ARC venture this week, but I'm currently still based in Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, getting ready for an ARC venture in San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjeri Rivas, getting back from an ARC venture in Ohio, but today I'm in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, we've been traveling. Adventures. All right, so I'm excited for today's episode because I originally thought I would tell this story during our hometown season, but then I decided to tell Ethel's story. But either way, I'm so excited because we also briefly mentioned this woman in our discussion with Melissa R. Daniel from the Architecture is Political podcast.
So many breadcrumbs.
Yeah, such a tease.
Yes, tease on tease on tease. Our adventure. All right, so anywho, our story begins on February 2nd, 1910, in Peoria, Illinois. Clotilde Woodard was born. Her father was Oliver, a scholar, and her mother was Coy Blanche, a chemist physicist who taught at the University of Oregon Dental College.
Sounds like both her parents were in academia.
Yeah, and also casual chemist physicist mom. Like, also, I'm so curious what a chemist physicist is doing at the dental college, but...
Fluoride.
Okay. Well, but I'm also more curious about, did they move to Oregon for her mom's job? Because, you know, she was in Illinois, Oregon. This is before the days of Zoom, so she's not teaching remote.
Yes, so they did move. So even though Clotilde was born in Illinois, she grew up in Portland. Sources say that Clotilde's interest in architecture began at the age of 12, when her family was building their new home. Apparently, Clotilde's mother wanted her to attend a women's college on the East Coast, but Clotilde was like, nah, and went to the University of Oregon and got her Bachelor of Architecture degree with high honors in 1932. Then, in the following year, she would attend Washington University in St. Louis and get her master's degree.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. She getting her academia on.
Yeah, no kidding.
So at this time, the Department of Architecture at Washington University was very much influenced by the arts and crafts movement. And the program seemed to be very welcoming to women. Clotilde was one of two women in her class of seven. Her odds were not that bad.
Yeah, that's true. As far as ratios go, that's actually not terrible. But arts and crafts movement is fun.
Yeah.
The arts and crafts movement was an international trend that it was at its height from 1880 to 1920. And it was a movement that was trying to simplify the previous very ornate styles of the 19th century. It's considered by some people the gateway into modernism, which took over in the 30s. But there's also some debate how it relates to Art Nouveau. Are they totally distinct? Was this the start of Art Nouveau? Anyway, that's a digression, a conversation for another day. But it sounds like Clotilde was learning all about it in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Sure was. Getting her master's at Washington University would aid in her future career in urban planning and community building. Now it's time for an exciting thesis name. Clotilde's master thesis was called An Industrial Housing Community for the City of St. Louis, Missouri.
That's actually not that bad. We've heard a lot worse on this show.
Yeah.
We really have. This one is short and to the point. I know what this thesis is about. It could not be said for many others.
Agreed.
No. So after graduating, Clotilde moved to New York and began working at an architecture firm with the architect Henry Wright. On the side, Clotilde would also volunteer at the Housing Study Guild.
The Housing Study Guild was founded in the summer of 1933 by Henry Wright, Lewis Mumford, and Albert Mayer to be a center for study and research of the technical, economic, and social problems of housing and community planning. Very interesting and important work, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. There, she would become buddy buddies with Lewis Mumford, who we might remember from previous ladies, but he was also known for his philosophies on civil societies and the built environment.
Yeah, I always remember that he's a famous person, but I don't often remember why. Good thing I just looked it up a few minutes ago.
All right, well, my reaction, which I'm pretty sure is exactly how I reacted the first time we talked about him, was from Mumford & Sons, which I know that's not his name either. It's Marcus Mumford. But anyway, obviously not. Every time, though, that's how I hear it. And we talked about Lewis on episode 24, Catherine Bauer.
That's right.
There you go. I do remember we kept referring to him as Mumford & Sons, like not even Lewis Mumford. Like,
yeah.
He was Mumford & Sons, just... Yeah, because we don't even know if he had sons. There was no, and yeah, it was just him and his crew. All right, so then our homegirl Clotilde moves to Washington, D.C. in 1935 to work at the Federal Housing Administration, starting as a senior draftsman in the rental housing division. Then she would work as an assistant architectural engineer, then an associate architect. Then eventually, she worked her way up to chief of research and planning in the large-scale housing division. At this time, her work was really important because the country was dealing with a lot of housing shortages. So some of her work included developing housing standards and policies.
Wow, that's so cool. Really putting her urban planning studies to work.
Mm-hmm.
Is this on the same timeline as Frances Perkins?
Somewhat. I think they probably crossed paths. Maybe I could find some crossover and include it in our wrap-up. So, we are now in 1939, and she joined architect A.R. Klass's office as a designer. I guess around this time, Clotilde would meet a fella named Bromley K. Smith, who worked at the State Department. They would get married on April 5th, 1940.
Love is in the air.
Love is in the air.
Cute, but wait, so she left her government job and is working in the private sector now?
Yes, she left her government job. But I think it was partly to be a wife and a mother because Clotilde would have two children, Bromley Jr. and Suzanne. And then with children and all, Clotilde and her husband would travel around the world following her husband's work. They went all over. First, they go to Montreal, Canada.
Okay, I'm not sure work from home was a thing in the 40s, so now it's sounding like Clotilde is taking a break from architecture and taking care of her family and her husband, the spy.
100%. She's living her best life and giving cover to her spy husband.
Yes. While in Canada, Clotilde designed an exhibit called City for Living in collaboration with her hubby. So her hubby was in on the cover-up, I guess. Mm. It was an exhibit on the importance of urban planning and to advocate the importance of better schools, parks, and amenities. It also talked about topics like uncontrolled expansion, slum removal, and improved urban health.
We take it back!
Oh, this guy is so great. So my earlier theory is wrong. She's clearly working from anywhere. Her work is international.
That's right. Taking her work on the road, preaching the importance of urban planning.
Yes. And on the road it went. So Clotilde and fam were in Canada for maybe like 2 or 3 years. And then the familia would move to La Paz, Bolivia. There, Clotilde would teach architecture at the Universidad Mayor de San Andrés for 2 years.
Ooh! This is episode 116, Teresa Gisbert's alma mater. But she went there in 1946, so unless Clotilde stays a few years, they're not about to run into each other.
Mm. Bummer. But I'm loving this world-traveling career that she's having.
Mm-hmm. Then, in 1944, our girl was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship to study the history of planning in South America. This would lead Clotilde to publish 3 articles in the Architectural Forum and the Architect's Yearbook.
That's so cool!
Wow, good for her!
Then, this led to Clotilde designing a master plan of Quito, Ecuador, in 1945, which for the life of me, I kept trying to find more info on what did the master plan look like, how'd she get there? But anyway, I think Clotilde designed this master plan of Quito, but I don't think it actually got built.
Aww. What? Ugh, but that's still so cool that she was planning Quito. I'm sad that it maybe didn't get built, though. Ugh.
Yeah. So, in 1946, Clotilde and her family moved back to Washington, D.C. There, she would work at the firm Burla and Abel, a firm known for modern architecture. Then, 3 years later, she would form her own firm, Keyes, Smith, Satterley, and Lethbridge, with a few of her colleagues.
Wow.
Yeah, nice. I love that they went out on their own. Also, can we talk about they just like up and left during World War II and then they were like, oh, and we're back?
Yeah.
I'm realizing it now. Like,
went to all these countries during a world war and they're like, oh, but I'm
not. Yeah. It was like, South America, we'll just hang out here.
That feels safe.
Yeah, I know. I was sort of like, was that strategic?
Possibly.
I mean, also, her husband was a spy, in quotation.
He worked for the State Department.
So they're like, well, we're going to go out of state. And be that department. Okay. All right. So if you thought that was a whirlwind, what happens next is a whirlwind, okay?
Ooh.
Because Clotilde has this firm, but then it'll just split after a few years. Then it would become Satterley and Smith. But then in 1963, the firm dissolved and it became just Clotilde, Woodard, Smith, and Associated Architects. Then this firm would be popping for like the next 20 years after that. So
I feel like this whole story has been a whirlwind.
Totally.
Yes.
I can't keep up with all the moves she's making.
Me neither.
Literal moves, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I couldn't recognize the folks, but DC listeners, if the names Arthur Cotton Moore, Hugh Newell Jackson, George Hartman, Warren Cox, Edward Marshall Hoard, or Colden Koch Florence ring a bell, these were all future principals and architects that came out of Clotilde's firm. It said that in 1980, 30% of the architects in the D.C. area had worked for Clotilde at some point.
Whoa!
Clotilde, the kingmaker.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So back to 1952, Clotilde would collaborate with Louis Jessmet to create a master plan for the redevelopment of Southwest DC. This project was a very visible development project. The master plan would be modified so that other architects would design their own parcels of land. Clotilde would design parcels, I believe, 1 through 4, that they called Capitol Parks.
I like that. Yeah, that's so cool. I feel like DC is already such a planned out city that to come in afterwards and add to the design is really cool.
Yeah.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.
Clotilde was doing a lot and collaborating a lot with not only architects, but landscape architects as well, like with landscape architect Dan Kiley. They designed apartments and townhouses like the one I mentioned before in Capitol Park, which would win an AIA Award of Merit in 1963.
Are there pictures of this?
Well, you'll just have to tune into our show notes to find out.
Jeez.
Tell you, that's the theme of the episode. Although this project won an award, it is also seen as controversial. There was a slum clearance, which also meant the destruction of several low-income communities that impacted several African-American households.
Ugh. This is a sad reality of a lot of urban planning, which we've talked about before. I would hope now that solutions that don't uproot people are being considered. But I also think it's hard because sometimes the intent behind these urban development projects are good, but the execution and reality of what it takes to make them happen isn't as ideal.
To say the least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've definitely touched on this subject before. And the more I learn about this, the more I'm led to believe that a lot of these decisions were very intentional.
Sure.
It was not a necessary evil or an unintended consequence sometimes.
Yeah.
It was, as we discussed in our Arcus Poly Charrette, very political.
Yes.
I'm glad that we're able to see this now. And like Lizzie said, I hope that there is something done about it in this day and age, that it's not so easy to displace people as it once was. But I don't know. Maybe it still is. Maybe I'm naive and optimistic.
Yeah, I think we need to do a little bit more digging into seeing what's happening now, especially nowadays with the whole just housing buying process and public housing and all that. So in the mid-60s, Smith worked on this residential project in Southwest Washington, D.C. called Harbor Square Apartments and Townhouses. What's cool is that she didn't just bulldoze over history. She kept these historic Wheat Row townhouses and blended them into the new design. It's like she brought together the best of both worlds, modern high-rise apartments alongside those charming old low-rise townhouses. Oh, and she even dreamed up this like super ambitious idea for a mixed-use bridge over the Potomac, kind of like DC's version of the Ponte Vecchio. Sadly, that never got built, but the vision was pretty bold for DC.
Oh, man, that's really sad that it was never realized. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we're going to need to see pictures of
this design too.
Okay, so I'm sorry for the auditory listeners out there, because that's the only option you'll have. But I can for sure tell you that this photo will be in the show notes because I had to look at it myself. Ladies, here was a sneak peek.
OMG, a model. Love me an architecture model. Okay, this place looks poppin', overlooking the water. It looks like it could be a vibrant community-making place.
Yeah, this is even more awesome than I originally thought. Even more of a bummer that it was never built. I'm so upset.
Yeah. So you'll have to check out our show notes again to see what it is that we're talking about.
Man.
You sure will.
Well, Clotilde would design and develop other properties outside of D.C. like Lakeland Town in St. Louis, Missouri, or the Chestnut Lounge Mental Hospital and Research Institute in Rockville, Maryland, or the one that first caught my attention was Lake Ann in Reston, Virginia. Now, since I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about her during the hometown season, there was a period when I lived in Virginia. Now, I didn't live in Reston, but I had a friend that did. So while I was there, I visited Reston a lot, and I was very familiar with the neighborhood.
So you were living an arc venture without even knowing it?
Sure was. It's a really cute little suburban little area. But y'all, so Clotilde, she did so much. Okay, so she did those residential developments, but she also did single-family homes. She designed a metro station. I'm assuming it's in D.C., but listeners, if you know, come holla at us. Now, I mentioned that she did a mental hospital earlier, and then there was a church, a school, a community center, then the U.S. Embassy in Paraguay.
What? Okay, her portfolio is all over the place.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Yeah, it is. Also, embassy design is like a whole other ballgame, too.
Yeah. There's a corner of office buildings in downtown Washington, D.C. on Connecticut Ave and L Street that Clotilde designed. They call it Clotilde's Corner now.
That's so cute.
There's a place with her name. She lives on forever.
Clotilde's Corner.
Yes, where three buildings meet. Clotilde really did leave a huge mark on D.C. and the surrounding area in three big ways, okay? First, she started a firm that became a breeding ground for a bunch of modern architects, kind of like a training hub for the next generation. Then, of course, are her designs and urban planning stuff that she did in Southwest D.C., and third, she played a key role in saving the historic Pension Building, which eventually became the National Building Museum, one of the top spots in the U.S. to celebrate architecture and building arts, which I didn't even mention this.
Okay, seriously, we have to add this to the list of art ventures immediately.
Yeah. No kidding. She really did so much.
Okay, what's hilarious about this is that I wrote this story or research here for a while ago. And I was like, National Building Museum. Yeah. I've been to that building so many times when I lived there.
That's funny.
Like, it just, like, clicked. You know how many events and stuff happened there?
Did you take any pictures?
I did, but I probably took pictures of the event, not so much of the building, now that I think about it.
It can still be on social media, like a little post.
Yeah. Ooh, I'll dig. But yeah, so teaser again. Be sure to check out our social media for photos.
Jessica living her best life.
All right. So the Washington Post architecture critic Ben Forgy asked Clotilde what building was her favorite. She said, the next one.
How clever.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorite quotes is when Clotilde is describing her design philosophy and the architect's role. Okay, so here's the quote. Architects are the set designers in people's lives. And until the lights go on and the play begins, we are the only people who have seen the whole and put the elements together. Seeing the buildings that shape people's lives before they are there and seeing them well in my mind's eye, that is the source of my work.
Wow, from now on, either talk to me about architecture this way or don't talk to me at all.
I mean, but seriously, I love how invested in architecture and urban planning she was and how she thought about projects as a cohesive entity.
Agreed. Also, I almost forgot to mention that in 1960, Clotilde became an AIA fellow. Just the sixth woman to do so.
Yeah, she did.
Woo-wee! How could she not? She did so much important work. I'm glad that she was recognized for how she advanced the profession of architecture.
Yes. So on December 30th, 1992, Clotilde passed away from cancer. She was at a hospital in Hampton, South Carolina.
Wow, she was only 72, but she did so much. And she left such a distinct mark on DC and also took her work on a world tour. I am very amazed by all of the work that she did all over the world and in DC. So thanks for sharing her story, Jessica.
Yes, you're welcome. All right, so now we have reached the second part of our episode, the Caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. So without further ado, drumroll please. Melissa R. Daniel!
Melissa!
Yeah, I told you it was a tease. We mentioned her at the top of the show. We did a charrette on her. Now, if you didn't catch our charrette earlier or you don't know who I'm talking about, here I am to tell you. Melissa R. Daniel is a facilities project manager in Maryland, and she is the creator and host of the Architecture is Political podcast, where Black and Brown folks discuss architecture. She received the 2022 AIA Whitney M. Young Award and the 2018 AIA Associates Award. Melissa serves as past chair of AIA Housing and Community Development Knowledge Committee and as a steering committee member to the DC Legacy Project Berry Farm Hillsdale.
Oh my goodness. I'm remembering how impressive her accolades are and how refreshing it was meeting her and talking throughout our charrette. She was so interesting with such a diverse career path.
Yeah, totally agree. We had a great time talking to her.
In her podcast. Don't get me started on her podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So her Architecture is Political podcast, I'm a huge fan of, which, again, it's about, quote, where brown and black folks have conversations about architecture.
I like how she describes that. In her opinion, any space where black and brown folks are navigating is inherently political. And while depending on your life experiences, you may or may not agree with her on that. I like that she makes it okay to share her ideas, but also disagree with her, how she welcomes a discussion. I mean, I personally think that there are few things these days that are not political.
Yeah, so true. But yeah, I love how she creates this space to discuss these topics, right? And she doesn't apologize for it.
I admire her honest conversations. And I think in so many ways, like I agree with you, Nergity, there's so many things that are political or how politics can infiltrate so many things. And I like how Melissa's show, she talks about how these things can be political or have political influences. And I really enjoyed our conversation with her. Funny enough, so while we were talking to her, she mentioned Clotilde. I had already, like, had decided I was going to do an episode on Clotilde. So it was really interesting to hear Melissa's perspective because Clotilde had designed a building that Melissa lived in. So from an urban planning perspective, how that affected Melissa growing up into who she became today was interesting to hear. So prior to this, when I thought about our season of how it was framed as like we were going to do a political season or government, and then it added urban planning and stuff, I just knew that I wanted to have a conversation with Melissa and her show because I felt like it would be a good introduction to what I was hoping we would talk about this season. Not so much like politics per se, but how the design and how our ladies had an impact on that as well.
Yeah, I think it totally fit. And it was such a great way to intro the season. And I remember her mentioning that in our conversation that she grew up in a building designed by Clotilde. So it totally makes sense that she would be the caryatid for this episode.
Yeah, I can't think of a more fitting caryatid.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for inviting her to a charrette, Jessica.
The pleasure's all mine. I've been wanting to talk and meet with her. So this is my way of like making it work. But yeah, it was a great conversation, and I loved learning about Clotilde too.
Nice. Awesome, Curiated. Now, let's visit the Agora.
Oh, sorry.
The Agora is a bonus segment of our show where we share news, big or small. So, here we go. Congratulations to Kendall Pinto on her recent wedding. Whee! We're very excited for her as she begins this new chapter of her life.
Yay, Kendall! Yay! Congrats on your wedding!
Love is in the air.
Love's in the air.
Congratulations. Listeners, we love hearing about these agoras. So if you have news to share, big or small, be sure to email us at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. And then we want to celebrate your life's wins with you.
That's right. Yeah. Put the subject line agora.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor. And most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Curiated along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family, tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website at shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at shebuildspod. Until then,
see ya!
Bye!
Adios!
I like that she makes it okay to share her,
share her ideas.
Share. The Texan is coming out of you. Share her ideas.
Share her ideas.
'Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.